Hey guys, welcome back to the Vice Casting Couch, season one, episode 28, Ryan? 29. Is
that correct?
29, my bad, guys. So we're back from a long hiatus on the run from some intelligence officials from a foreign country. You know, Assad, they be
Assad. They tried to get us with the Pegasus, but we're not on WhatsApp.
Yeah, man, the NSO group. Can't trust them. Anyway, I think Ryan has some interesting story about some kind of vulnerability, if I'm not mistaken.
Close. So, not at all. Have you? Not yet, anyways. Have you ever taken a proctored exam?
Unfortunately, I have not. I don't have a webcam. You know, those things spy on people.
And I'm not talking about the intrusive doctor. That's a proctologist.
Have had one of those.
Oh, well, yeah.
Anyway, proctored exams. Are you talking like what CompTIA does?
Or? Yes, specifically, actually, what CompTIA does. So this was brought up in the context of a university. So there was a student in Ohio. They were having him take an online exam, and they asked him to scan his room, right, as one does. Anyone who's taken a proctored exam or has looked into it, especially in the, you know, IT world, that's a very popular thing to do. And so he scanned his room, he took the exam, and then he turned around and he sued the university because he said that the scanning of his room was against his Fourth Amendment right, against
privacy invasion.
Correct. Against random search and seizures, that sort of thing. And it went all the way up to federal court, and they ruled that he was correct. Companies can no longer scan your room during proctored exams or remote exams. Now, I did look into this a little bit because I was like, I don't know how companies are going to respond to that, because that how are you going to determine whether they're cheating or not? Mm-hmm. So I looked at CompTIA, and they did update it, and they said now that you have to take pictures of your room instead of a live scan. I don't know how that changes anything, but that's what they're saying right now. I don't know if that'll change in the future. Maybe they'll just drop it altogether. I don't know. As of now, you still do have to take pictures of your room, but the scanning of your room, was a live scan, was considered unconstitutional. And the scanning of that particular university was also stored on a server, so that recording of his room was stored. So I don't know if they don't store it, maybe it's okay. I'm not sure exactly what they're gonna define.
I was gonna ask, from my understanding, and I'm no legal expert or anything, but the Constitution is mainly to hold the government back, maybe not private enterprise. Because if you're taking a proctored exam, I'm pretty sure there's probably some kind of terms and agreements that you're agreeing to.
I would assume, yes. I mean, when you take the exam, you do. So I've never taken a proctored exam, but I did look at their requirements. And there is and if you have, obviously, feel free to comment if we're wrong. From what I understand, you do sign something that says if you do cheat or if there's anything in the room, blah, 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 that helped you in the exam, then they'll revoke the exam, specifically CompTIA. They're big on that. So I would assume that includes, like, hey, we're going to take pictures of your room, and if we find anything, like, how else would they prove it, right? I mean, you could have a freaking whiteboard behind your computer with all the, answers on it or whatever, or your notes or whatever. So there has to be some way, I guess. I don't know. I kind of see both sides. Like, I get why the companies do it to stop people from cheating.
Yeah, keep the integrity of the test alive.
Yeah, exactly, because otherwise it's not really worth much. But on the other side, I also see their point of not being able to scan their room. To further that argument as well, I mean, I don't know. I kind of see taking an exam based on memory as kind of not useless, but I do think it's much more valuable to have someone who can find the answer and is knowledgeable generally in the topic, rather than someone who can just memorize a bunch of ports and then take a test. But
yeah, I will say, especially in IT, like, you know how many times you're going to reference some kind of documentation or manual, especially when it's something you're not super familiar with. Like, not everyone, I bet there are a few people, and good for you, but not everyone can memorize all the Cisco commands when you're trying to program a switch, or what if you instead of Cisco, your company gets a Brocade or Juniper because they're cheaper, now you got to reference that. Like, you understand the methodology, say, behind VLANs and subnetting and all this stuff that goes into networking, but stuff like that, to your point.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little much to expect someone to memorize all of that, or at least the pertinent parts, and then take the exam and then be like, oh, you're good to, do whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It's nearly impossible to memorize everything. I mean, I recently took an exam that focused heavily on like software usage and stuff like that. And there, I mean, there's thousands of different commands and flags and triggers that you can program into it. I don't know anyone who can just go in and do it flawlessly every time. Usually there's a cheat sheet that they have that has, you know, the flags and triggers and whatever else. So then you can input all of it. Cause it's, I mean, it's different every time. Usually not doing the same thing over and over. So I don't know. I think it's way more useful to have someone who can find the answer and has the resources available rather than someone who can just think that they know it all and, you know, go off the top of their head.
Yeah, we get it, Ryan. You have a poor memory.
I do have a terrible memory as well. So I'm personally invested in this argument, but also I just find it way more useful.
So one of the things I was going to ask, and maybe I don't know if this plays into the ruling at all, was this during the time of COVID when there was no other option besides online, or was this a little bit more recently when stuff has opened up a little bit more?
So I believe he took the exam while COVID was a bigger deal than it is now in a lot of places. But this ruling is now coming out now, basically. I mean,
I could see how that maybe that plays a part into their argument is like, say if he was like, hey, I want to take this in person because I don't want you to scan my room.
Yeah.
Then, and they're like, no, we can't do that because of, and maybe that's how the Fourth Amendment plays into it. You know, and this is just me spitballing at the moment, but like,
yeah,
you know, because the CDC came down with all these rules about social distancing and everything. And if they were like, hey, we can't do it because of the government rules that are applied to us,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's like a state run university or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that kind of makes a little bit more sense in my brain. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer. If someone has a little bit more legal expertise than we do, please comment down below. I'd love to understand the inner workings of how this case came to the ruling it did.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be helpful to have some context to it. Because, yeah, again, we aren't lawyers or anything like that. So we can't read the docket or whatever and be like, oh, yeah, this means this. And that's why they made this ruling.
And you're going to put the link to this down below, correct?
Yep. This article was from August. So August 23rd. So just a couple weeks ago.
Well, speaking of something that could tie into invasiveness, depending on how it's, you know, what attaches to it, I should say. But not really. You know, I'm just trying to make a poor segue. Anyway, T-Mobile and SpaceX, y'all have probably heard all the news, but we just wanted to touch on it a little bit. They're actually going to team up in the future. And the idea is to eliminate all the dead zones, at least in the continental United States. Its territories, it mentions Hawaii, parts of Alaska, Puerto Rico, and certain territorial waters. So it's pretty interesting. They say probably need a new phone, but it says these phones will be able to connect to satellites and get around 2 to 4 megabits per second down, which isn't amazing, but I've had a lot less. There's times I've had 1 megabit and I'm still able to load websites and, you know, shoot text messages. And that's what it mainly talks about in the articles. They're like, yeah, you could send MMS messages. You could use apps like iMessage or WhatsApp, which I could find extremely helpful, especially if you're some kind of backpacker and you're going to some remote area. If you get hurt, how are you going to call for help? You know,
definitely has some real world uses that are very good, especially with it being islands with hurricanes as well. So I think the last hurricane that came through, or one of the last ones that hit Puerto Rico, like they had no internet, no connectivity, nothing, I believe for like a day or two. So to have something like that that you can kind of fall back on would be extremely helpful.
And another article that ties into the same subject, so not just T-Mobile, but apparently Elon Musk and SpaceX are holding talks with Apple about using the Starlink connectivity for upcoming iPhones. That way they can connect. Obviously, they got to figure out the software and hardware piece, but I think it's still very interesting. It's a whole new world, you know, where you're not, it's not like, you know, the old Sprint commercials where he's like, can you hear me now? And he's holding his phone up and kind of looking around for for a cell phone service. And
was that Verizon or Sprint?
I thought it was Sprint. Who knows?
That was Verizon.
Sprint's no more anyway, so.
True.
Because T-Mobile bought them. Look, it went full circle. That's crazy.
Good segue.
Yeah. But they mentioned with this new iPhone that, you know, this could especially be useful with stuff like Find My iPhone, some kind of emergency SOS via satellite.
Yeah.
That way, you know, if you lose your phone or you're in some kind of danger, reach someone and emergency responders can get to you.
Yeah, definitely has some real world applications.
They say it's going to take a minute to roll out these new satellites. The Gen 2 Starlink satellites are going to have bigger antennas. I think it said 5 to 6 meters across. Mm. That way it can beam down to a smaller device. As we know now, the Starlink terminals have to have some kind of dish that has like beam forming technology in it.
Beam forming.
It's actually really cool. It's similar to the technologies that's used in some radar applications, especially in planes. Okay. Is that it's like a grid of very small antennas, but there's like some mathematical sorcery where you can adjust the power on individual antennas and make a beam. From my understanding, I'm not an electronic engineer, but it's pretty impressive that they're able to mass produce and commercialize a product like that.
That is interesting. Well, here's another poor segue into another story. So this one is is about hackers using what's called sock puppets. And they're using this for more realistic phishing attacks, specifically an Iranian hacking group known as TA453, or that's their designation anyways. So what they do is they send an email, right? So they send an email to whomever, mainly it was like Intel companies and stuff like that, contractors. And then they would reply to their email with another spoofed email, basically adding credence to the original email. So they would send an email to you and be like, hey, we're looking to Intel leaks or something like that. We're trying to patch some holes. Do you think you could help us out? You know, if you could give us some, what you're working on right now, we can look into it. And then they have some other like researcher from California or something that, you know, just a random identity that they made up. And they would respond to that and be like, oh, yeah, I actually have some intel as well. Can you take a look at this or whatever? And then hopefully that pushes the person they originally sent it to divulge information. So just, be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, man, you can never be too careful with phishing. They got some pretty big hooks nowadays and they're getting a little bit more sophisticated. Have you seen those lures? Impeccable. It looks like a real fish.
Well, this is one of them right here. And
yeah, but it's an email.
Well, yeah. But they do give a example email on this website as well from Bleeping Computer, from this article. And it does look fairly legitimate. It says it's from the director of research at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. Not too many grammar errors or spelling mistakes. You know, I guess gone are the days with the, you know, Nigerian prince asking for money to buy gold bars. It's now more targeted, more sophisticated, getting better every day, apparently.
Speaking of phishing, I know this is kind of old news, but I think it's still important to at least talk about is Twilio. Which is an online VoIP SMS authentication provider. They actually suffered a phishing attack. I think about 125 of their customers were exposed because a Twilio employee's accounts were hijacked, essentially. When you think of 125 customers, it sounds small, but when you think that Twilio works with businesses, a business is a customer. So one of these customers was Signal, and they said, 1,900 Signal Messenger accounts were potentially compromised. And this is because Signal, they require you to verify your phone number when you get the app. And they use Twilio on the back end to send the SMS verification codes used when you register on the Signal app. And so they were saying it was possible. And I want to say there was a handful of people, like maybe five. What the hackers could have done is they could have seen you registering the account and they could have gotten that verification code and they could have took over the registration process on their device. Now, Signal did release a message saying that there's rest assured that no message history or contact list or profile information was accessible. And they also doubled down that, hey, there is stuff to stop this that we have implemented. We have thought of this. A similar attack like this was SIM swapping, where you can social engineer, say, the telecom companies to port your SIM from your SIM card to a malicious one that they have. And so Signal has their registration lock, which has a Signal PIN. You make a PIN code. That way, when you do register on a new device, you have to enter that to prove that, hey, not only do you own the phone number, but you also know the PIN that you set up. And it kind of gives that extra layer of security. And one of the other companies that I think was affected was Cloudflare. They weren't really affected because they have, I want to say they have digital keys for each individual employee and that two-factor authentication right there.
Smart. So I did read an article on that, and they did say that some users did report that there were spoof accounts made under their name. Pretty sure they were rectified afterwards by Signal.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact number. I want to say it was somewhere between like 2 and 5 people.
Yeah,
I
saw wasn't a lot.
That reported. It was a small handful because they did find this relatively quickly.
Yeah, when I saw the article, it almost broke my heart. I was like, oh no, Signal's been hacked. And so I looked into it. I was like, not really.
Yeah, no, and people at work were like, look, man, why do you use Signal? And I was like, look, every company, especially on the scale of Signal, is going to suffer some kind of attack or targeting.
Yeah.
Just because the press, you know, because Signal is touted as this super secure and private and encrypted.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
you get a lot more clicks if you say Signal.
When you look into the story, it's like, yeah, they did suffer something, but it wasn't any of their critical infrastructure. There wasn't anything in the encryption that was broken. Handful of users, they said 1,900 users had their phone numbers exposed. And of that, that me and Ryan know of, there's a handful of people that actually claim to have been somewhat affected.
Yeah, if this is the worst that Signal has been had so far, I will gladly accept that over Telegram or WhatsApp that have known vulnerabilities that still haven't been patched, like Pegasus for WhatsApp. But if this is the worst that's happened so far, I will gladly accept that.
And the other thing is, you know, this is important to talk about because there could be a day when Signal does have a very serious vulnerability in their code.
Yeah.
So make sure to look at alternatives. Have like a backup plan in place, be it something like Theorem or Matrix, you know, with the element and all that, or, you know, some other end-to-end encrypted thing, preferably open source. As we've seen with WhatsApp, while it is end-to-end encrypted, it's owned by a huge dating mining company called Facebook, or now Meta, I should say. It's always good to think of like plan Bs, like what would happen if Signal goes down? Should I use Briar, which is a peer-to-peer, uses the Tor network protocol, or should I use, you know, something else? Maybe not switch to it now, but at least have that kind of in the back of your mind that when something does happen and it is very serious.
Yeah, then you can go to something else and wait till it clears up.
Yeah, you have a way forward. Yeah. I did find a little blurb actually about Cloudflare.
Yeah.
It says that they were unsuccessfully targeted by this phishing scam, but their use of physical security keys issued to every employee helped impede the attack. So because they had that physical two-factor instead of just an SMS number, it really didn't do anything to them.
Nice. Good for them. But that should be implemented in more companies, in my opinion.
Yeah. If any companies are listening, which I highly doubt, look into YubiKeys and what is it, the U2F protocol, if you guys could implement it, because it is an open protocol. A few companies already have it. If you know, if you want to implement that, I'd be happy to be a customer.
Yeah, definitely gives you a leg up as proof of Cloudflare not being affected by this. That's the proof you're looking for. There it is.
For sure.
So staying on the topic of phishing and vulnerabilities, there was a, well, I guess currently, there is a phishing scam going around centered around Queen Elizabeth's death. So apparently these scammers, I guess, are purporting to be Microsoft, either from Microsoft like customer support or something like that. And they're saying, hey, we want to invite you to post on our artificial tech hub in the Queen's honor. And if you can give us some like a collage or something like that, to put on here to make a in memorial of Queen Elizabeth's life and reign and stuff like that. And basically, once you click on it, it's just a credential harvester, and they try to steal the multi-factor authentication from your account and then take over your account from there. So just be aware that if you get an email asking you to collaborate on a memorial for Her Majesty, it is most likely a phishing scam.
Yeah, I know the Queen wouldn't message me. That's crazy.
Well, she's dead, so I don't think she's messaging a lot of people.
Is she, though?
What are you suggesting, John?
I thought we agreed she's reptilian.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just playing everyone. The Queen was a great person, to my knowledge. There's some ties to Epstein and the family. I don't know.
Whoa, allegedly, reportedly. Yeah, if we were monetized.
Anyway,
we can kind of say whatever we want at this point, because it's not, we have no sponsors to piss off or anything like that.
Except for NordVPN. Make sure to hit our link down below.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just playing. Nord hates us. Anyway.
Well,
another,
I mean,
company, if they weren't shit, themselves. What's that?
What?
Huh?
No, nothing.
Oh, okay.
I was just thinking back to the times that we've talked about NordVPN and their business practices.
Yeah, cut that out. Cut that out.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, another company I want to talk about. It's not actually a hack. They're offering a new service, but they do tout themselves as a more private and secure provider, is DuckDuckGo. There has been some controversy around DuckDuckGo recently, especially with how they have some Microsoft trackers built in. Because if you don't know, DuckDuckGo gets their search results from Bing because they don't actually have their own index. They kind of get all the search results from Bing and make sure it's anonymized, kind of. But these Microsoft trackers, it's a whole story. That's for another day. But they recently are now offering their anti-tracking email service to everyone. It was in beta for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
But they say if you have the mobile app, browser extension, or the Mac browser, you can now sign up for this DuckDuckGo email. You will have a email address that ends in duck.com. But the cool thing about this is they kind of focus on some of the issues in email. Is there's these pixel trackers or certain link identifiers, and they kind of strip all that out. It is interesting, and it'll actually make a list of all the trackers it found, from my understanding. Yep. I haven't actually signed up for it. I kind of moved away from DuckDuckGo, but I am, you know, hopeful maybe they'll get their act together. You know, if you want a slightly more private option, look into DuckDuckGo.
I did sign up for it, actually.
Oh, did you? Have you used it recently?
I have used it, and it's somewhat helpful. Again, I haven't. It is pretty new. It came out like what, maybe a week ago or something like that.
Yeah, it was really recent, actually.
Yeah, so it seems to work, I guess. It's not really like anything crazy from what I can see, but it's just kind of an added bonus, I guess. You can put it into websites if you use the DuckDuckGo browser, like on your phone. I have it, and when you load up a website and it asks you to put in your email, it will automatically suggest the email that you signed up for with DuckDuckGo, which is a nice feature. So you don't have to enter the email multiple times or anything like that, or remember what your @duck.com email was. It'll just automatically input it, and it'll tell you, hey, for this email, this is the one linked to it with your, you know, your Duck account or whatever, your Duck email. Do you want to input this one? Do you want to input this one that's linked to this account? And you can choose which one you want to put in.
So a quick question, seeing you have some experience with it, mm-hmm. Is it more of like an email alias or is an actual email account? Because I'm getting conflicting information on this article from Ars Technica.
As far as I can tell, it is an alias. It is not an actual account.
So you will have to have a primary email on,
correct,
say, something else like ProtonMail or Tutanota.
Yes, it does not go to whatever, a separate mailbox. It goes to the same mailbox that you have with your actual email, but it just strips everything out beforehand. So I'm assuming it goes to their server first. They strip everything out, or they, you know, tag it or whatever, what have you, and then it goes to your actual email.
Okay.
So yeah,
is there a limit on how many aliases you can get, or?
As far as I know, there is not, because all you do to sign up for one is you just input your actual email, and then it just pseudo masks it with the duck @duck.com email, and then it just routes it. It basically just acts as an email proxy, if that's, yeah, how you want to think of it.
Well, because I use something similar. I've been using it's called Simple Login.
Mm.
But with them, depending on which tier of their, they do have a free tier, but they have some paid options.
Yeah.
Is you can get multiple aliases. So say if you sign up for, let's say, the Wall Street Journal, right? Mm-hmm. You can make an alias, call it like WSJ Wall Street Journal, and then it has like some random characters, and then @SimpleLogin. And then it'll forward from that address to your primary mailbox. And that way, if you get a lot of people, especially in the privacy and security community, tout that as a benefit, as having a single alias for each service.
Yeah.
If you get something that's not from, say, we'll just use the Wall Street Journal as our example, be like, oh, I only gave that email to this company. Maybe they had a data breach they haven't told us about yet.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. Because it is a unique email address for each service.
Okay. So this one, I guess you could use it like that, but it's more of just a straight up proxy. It's not a unique alias that gets tagged to your email. It's usually just your email, like, handle, your prefix.
It's more than just a proxy, right? It removes tracking and,
well, yeah. I mean, I guess that would be oversimplified, but okay. I mean, in a way it is a proxy because
yes,
it goes through theirs, you know, their servers, they strip whatever. So yeah, I mean, it does more than a proxy. It doesn't anonymize you or anything like that. It's just simply for stripping trackers and just kind of, yeah, just rerouting your stuff to make it a little cleaner.
It is interesting. I am very curious to see if other companies will implement something similar. In the article, it mentioned the, you know, you ever copied like an Amazon link and you notice all those random characters at the end?
Yeah.
That is so they can track you, actually. Mm-hmm. It's based in the URL. And they're like, oh, he sent that link here. Or he did this. Well, there's, it looks like DuckDuckGo is tackling that. While removing the tracking modifiers from the link, it'll also upgrade it from HTTP to HTTPS. That way it's secure when you first click on it, and it doesn't have to like attempt to try connecting to an unencrypted website. It does mention that, like I said before, they're like these pixel trackers. So like, it's like a clear image. Like, it's a one pixel wide image, and it has a way of knowing when you opened it, and it can send back stuff like your IP address, geolocation to the company, and it removes that as well. So I am very curious on seeing how this goes forward. I just don't know if I'm going to use it. My faith in DuckDuckGo is a little shattered at the moment. But
yeah, so I did like briefly look into the accusations when they first came out. I don't know if you did as well. I know the owner did put out CEO did put out a statement about the Microsoft trackers. And they basically said that they did it strictly because Microsoft requires it to use their services. So they only added as many as are needed to actually use the Microsoft products and accounts while you're using the DuckDuckGo products. And they said they are working in the future to remove those eventually. But as of now, they can't do it. Otherwise, you won't be able to use certain Microsoft services through DuckDuckGo. So I don't believe it's the right call. I would rather just use something else if I'm going to use a Microsoft product. I don't use many. So I would rather just, you know, pull up another browser, what have you, if I'm going to use something from Microsoft. I kind of get their reasoning behind it, but I know a lot of people want to just kind of set something and forget it if they're going to have a daily driver of, okay, I'm just going to use my DuckDuckGo browser, and then they can't access Microsoft or some services or whatever they're using, then I could see them getting pissed.
Well, my main argument is I don't know about you in your area, but sometimes when I'm going down the freeway, I actually have seen DuckDuckGo billboards.
Yes.
And they're like, yep, Tired of being tracked, want a more private search. Like, I don't know the exact phrasing they use, but they tout themselves as a private and secure search engine option.
Yeah.
But then when you see something like that, it's like, well, are you really? And then the other thing that really turned me off, and not to go deep into DuckDuckGo or you know, change your opinion at all, is but it was came out because they use Bing as their search provider. Bing decided to downvote what they count as Russian misinformation when this whole Ukraine stuff popped off. That didn't sit well with me. And while I understand the thought behind it and the intention, my question is, this is kind of a slippery slope. Who decides what misinformation is? And you know, I want the Russians to lose, don't get me wrong. I think that should be up to the individual to decide, and not some tech company that just has a good market share to sway, you know, opinion one way or another. You know, I just think it's, you know, with that and the tracking, I just think it's a little shady. And personally, I use Brave, and while Brave does use Bing for some of their results, they are actively working on building their own search index. And I know people have a problem with Brave because their whole cryptocurrency thing. I kind of like the idea that they have their own index, and they will show you it. When you do a search result, it's actually really interesting. You can click on it, and it says, hey, this was 100% provided by Brave. Or, hey, you know, 80% of the results were from our index. The other 20% were from Bing, and we're still working on it. You know, something like that.
So I do agree with you that I don't necessarily like that DuckDuckGo uses Bing exclusively. For me, I guess I kind of look at it as a kind of like their email thing. They're making a service that you're already probably using, and they make it a little bit better.
100%. I think it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I don't Google, trust DuckDuckGo exclusively. I'm not saying like, oh yeah, they're the, you know, pioneers of privacy for searching. I'm not saying anything like that. I would rather use that at least as a step forward rather than, you know, just going to Bing itself or something like that.
Well, I got to give them credit. They actually have done pretty well marketing themselves. And, you know, if you mention DuckDuckGo to someone who knows even just a little bit about tech, you know, even potentially like, you know, someone in your family who isn't that tech savvy, they might have heard of it already. Yeah. And if you show them like, hey, yeah, it looks slightly different from Google, but you get practically the same results. Some people, depending on what you're looking up, I have heard complain about the search results just because Bing and Google use different algorithms.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, when I was using it, I had no problem.
Yeah, I mean, I will say when they very first started and I started using them, their search results, they were a little ass. Like they were not the best, but they have since then they have polished. And maybe that has something to do with Bing's algorithm maybe getting better or not. I'm not sure how the algorithm worked when they first started, but maybe they were trying to index when they first started. I'm not sure. But they have gotten so much better. And honestly, I can't complain at all when I use their service. It's pretty flawless.
If you guys are interested, maybe me and Ryan could do a show exclusively about alternative search engine providers you know, just dive deeper on certain privacy respecting programs, services, stuff like that. So if you guys are interested in something like that, leave a comment down below. We just like to feel the feedback of our viewers. And maybe you guys already know about it, but maybe we know something you don't know. You know, who knows? But
oh yeah, I mean there's huge money in providing services like that. So
there's so many search engines, like there's Swiss Cows, Moji. There's so many.
There's Q absolutely from insane. France.
Oh yeah, oh, what a is that? Good one. Quant? Is
yeah,
that
something Quant? Like that. Quant.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just always see referred to as Q,
which actually uses anonymous Google results.
Yeah. Well, not even search engines, but just anything that has to do with searching or algorithms email providers. I mean, there's alternatives to Facebook. There's alternatives to Twitter. We've already talked about Odyssey. That's an alternative to YouTube. There is always an alternative to everything. There are some compromises, obviously, like with certain like Facebook alternatives and stuff like that, you know, Friendica and stuff like that. There hey, are some
not on Friendica. I'll tell you that.
No, there's not a whole lot of people on Friendica, to be honest, but there are always alternatives, but it just depends on how secure you want to be and what compromises you're willing to accept. It's always good just to put a foot forward. So even if just switching from Google to DuckDuckGo, like I was saying before, that's already a step in the right direction. Even though it's not perfect and you do give up some things, it just depends on how serious you are about being secure.
Hey, Ryan, do you remember, this was quite a while ago, do you remember that podcast we teamed up with when we talked about online privacy and being a human right and stuff like that?
Yeah, with Notion Club. Notion Club podcast. Yep, we talked about data rights.
Maybe we can make a follow-up or reassess with them.
Yeah, I think they'd definitely be down with that.
Yeah, your people give my people work it out. You know?
Yeah. We'll send some memos back and forth. All right, well, I think that's all we have for today. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.